Chapter 25. Have you? Says Hedzoff. Sleeboots, my chamberlain, will act for me, says the prince. I beg your royal highness's pardon, but you will have to act for yourself, and it's a pity to wake Baron Sleeboots. The Prince Bobo still seemed to take the matter very coolly. Of course, Captain, says he, you are come about that affair with Prince Giglio? Precisely, says Hedzoff, that affair of Prince Giglio. Is it to be pistols, or swords, Captain? Asks Bobo. I'm a pretty good hand with both, and I'll do for Prince Giglio as sure as my name is my Royal Highness Prince Bobo. There's some mistake, my lord, says the captain. He business is done with axes among us. Axes? That's sharp work, says Bobo. All my chamberlain, he'll be my second, and in 10 minutes, I flatter myself, you'll see Master Giglio's head off his impertinent shoulders. I'm hungry for his blood, hoo-hoo-ah. And he looked as savage as an ogre. I beg your pardon, sir, but by this warrant I am to take you prisoner, and hand you over to the executioner. Pooh, pooh, my good man. Stop, I say, ho. Hulloa. Was all that this luckless prince was enabled to say. For Hedzoff's guard seizing him, tied a handkerchief over his mouth and face, and carried him to the place of execution. The king, who happened to be talking to Glumboso, saw him pass, and took a pinch of snuff and said, so much for Giglio. Now let's go to breakfast. The captain of the guard handed over his prisoner to the sheriff, with the fatal order, at sight cut off the bearer's head. Valoroso XXIV. It's a mistake, says Bobo, who did not seem to understand the business in the least. Pooh pooh pooh, says the sheriff. Etch Jack Ketch instantly. Jack Ketch. And poor Bobo was led to the scaffold, where an executioner with a block and a tremendous axe was always ready in case he should be wanted. But we must now revert to Giglio and Betsinda. Zai. What Gruffanuff did to Giglio and Betsinda. Gruffanuff, who had seen what had happened with the king, and knew that Giglio must come to grief, got up very early the next morning, and went to devise some plans for rescuing her darling husband, as the silly old thing insisted on calling him. She found him walking up and down the garden, thinking of a rhyme for Betsinda. Tinder and Winda were all he could find, and indeed having forgotten all about the past evening, except that Betsinda was the most lovely of beings. Well, dear Giglio, says Gruff. Well, dear Gruffy, says Giglio, only he was quite satirical. I have been thinking, darling, what you must do in this scrape. You must fly the country for a while. What scrape, fly the country? Never without her I love, Countess, says Giglio. No, she will accompany you, dear prince, she says, in her most coaxing accents. First, we must get the jewels belonging to our royal parents, and those of her, and his present majesty. Here is the key, duck, they are all yours, you know, by right, for you are the rightful king of Paphlagonia, and your wife will be the rightful queen. Will she? Says Giglio. Yes, and having got the jewels, go to Glumboso's apartment, where, under his bed, you will find sacks containing money to the amount of L217,987,439.13612D, all belonging to you, for he took it out of your royal father's room on the day of his death. With this we will fly. We will fly? Says Giglio. Yes, you and your bride, your affianced love, your Gruffy, says the Countess, with a languishing leer. You my bride, says Giglio. You hideous old woman. Oh, you wretch. Didn't you give me this paper promising marriage? Cries Gruff. Get away, you old goose. I love Betsinda, and Betsinda only. And in a fit of terror he ran from her as quickly as he could. He, shrieks out Gruff, a promise is a promise, if there are laws in Paphlagonia. And as for that monster, that wretch, that fiend, that ugly little vixen, as for that upstart, that ingrate, that beast, Bathsheba, Master Giglio will have no little difficulty in discovering her whereabouts. He may look very long before finding her, I warrant. He little knows that Miss Bathsheba is what? Now, you shall hear. Poor Bathsheba got up at 5 in winter's morning, to bring her cruel mistress her tea, and instead of finding her in a good humor, found Gruffy as cross as two sticks. The Countess boxed Bathsheba's ears half a dozen times, whilst she was dressing, but as poor little Bathsheba was used to this kind of treatment, she did not feel any special alarm. "Andy now," says she, "when her majesty rings her bell twice, I'll trouble you, miss, to attend." So when the queen's bell rang twice, Bathsheba came to her majesty, and made a pretty little curtsy. The queen, the princess, and Gruffanuff were all three in the room. As soon as they saw her they began, "You wretch," says the queen. "You little vulgar thing," says the princess. "You beast," says Gruffanuff. "Get out of my sight," says the queen. "Go away with you, do," says the princess. "Quit the premises," says Gruffanuff. Alas, and woe is me. Very lamentable events had occurred to Bathsheba that morning, and all in consequence of that fatal warming pan business of the previous night. The king had offered to marry her. Of course her majesty the queen was jealous. Bulbo had fallen in love with her. Of course Angelica was furious. Giglio was in love with her, and oh, what a fury Gruffy was in. "Cap, take off that petticoat I gave you," they said, all at once. "Gown," and began tearing the clothes off poor Bathsheba. The king? "How dare you flirt with Prince Bulbo?" cried the queen. "The Prince Giglio? Princess, and Countess. Give her the rags she wore when she came into the house, and turn her out of it," cries the queen. "Mind she does not go with my shoes on, which I lent her so kindly," says the princess. And indeed the princess's shoes were a great deal too big for Bathsheba. "Come with me, you filthy hussy." And taking up the queen's poker, the cruel Gruffanuff drove Bathsheba into her room. The countess went to the glass box in which he had kept Bathsheba's old cloak and shoe this ever so long, and said, "Take those rags, you little beggar creature, and strip off everything belonging to honest people, and go about your business." And she actually tore off the poor little delicate thing's back, almost all her things, and told her to be off out of the house. Poor Bathsheba huddled the cloak round her back, on which were embroidered the letters Prin. Dot 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 Rosal dot dot, and then came a great rent. As for the shoe, what was she to do with one poor little tootsie sandal? The string was still to it, so she hung it round her neck. "Won't you give me a pair of shoes to go out in the snow, Mum, if you please, Mum?" cried the poor child. "No, you wicked beast," says Gruffanuff, driving her along with the poker, driving her down the cold stairs, driving her through the cold hall, flinging her out into the cold street, so that the knocker itself shed tears to see her. But a kind fairy made the soft snow warm for her little feet, and she wrapped herself up in the ermine of her mantle, and was gone. "And now let us think about breakfast," says the greedy queen. "What dress shall I put on, Mama, the pink or the pea green?" says Angelica. "Which do you think the dear prince will like best?" Mrs. V sings out the king from his dressing room, "Let us have sausages for breakfast. Remember we have Prince Bulbo staying with us." And they all went to get ready. 9 o'clock came, and they were all in the breakfast room, and no Prince Bulbo as yet. The urn was hissing and humming. The muffins were smoking such a heap of muffins, the eggs were done, there was a pot of raspberry jam, and coffee, and a beautiful chicken and tongue on the side table. Marmitonio the cook brought in the sausages. "Oh, how nice they smelt! Where is Bulbo?" said the king. "Oh, where is his royal highness?" John said he had a took up his Erlinus's shaving water, and his clothes and things, and he wasn't in his room, which he supposed his royaliness was just stepped out. Stepped out before breakfast in the snow. "Impossible," says the king, sticking his fork into a sausage. "Why dear, take one. Angelica, won't you have a saveloy? The princess took one, being very fond of them, and at this moment Glumboso entered with Captain Edzoff, both looking very much disturbed. I am afraid, your majesty, cries Glumboso. No business before breakfast, Glum, says the king. Breakfast first, business next. Mrs. V, some more sugar. Sire, I am afraid, if we wait till after breakfast it will be too late, says Glumboso. He'll be hanged at 9:30. Don't talk about hanging, and spoil my breakfast, you unkind, vulgar man you, cries the princess. Own, some mustard. Pray, who is to be hanged? Sire, it is the prince, whispers Glumboso to the king. Talk about business after breakfast, I tell you, says his majesty, quite sulky. We shall have a war, sire, depend on it, says the minister. His father, King Padella. His father, King who? Says the king. King Padella is not Giglio's father. My brother, King Savio, was Giglio's father. It's Prince Bulbo they are hanging, sire, not Prince Giglio, says the prime minister. You told me to hang the prince, and I took the ugly one, says Edzoff. Didn't, of course, think your majesty intended to murder your own flesh and blood. The king for all reply flung the plate of sausages at Edzoff's head. The princess cried out ikerikeri, and fell down in a fainting fit. Turn the cock of the urn upon her royal highness, said the king, and the boiling water gradually revived her. His majesty looked at his watch, compared it by the clock in the parlor, and by that of the church in the square opposite. Then he wound it up, then he looked at it again. He great question is, says he, am I fast, or am I slow? If I'm slow, we may as well go on with breakfast. If I'm fast, why, there is just the possibility of saving Prince Bulbo. It's a deuced awkward mistake, and upon my word, heads off, I have the greatest mind to have you hanged to. Sire, I did but my duty. A soldier has but his orders. I didn't expect after 47 years of faithful service that my sovereign would think of putting me to a felon's death. 100,000 plagues upon you. Can't you see that, while you are talking my Bulbo is being hung? Screamed the princess. By Jove! She's always right, that girl, and I'm so absent, says the king, looking at his watch again. Eh! There go the drums! What a deuced awkward thing though! Oh, Papa, you goose! Write the reprieve, and let me run with it, cries the princess, and she got a sheet of paper, and pen and ink, and laid them before the king. Confound it! Where are my spectacles? The monarch exclaimed. Angelica, go up into my bedroom, look under my pillow, not your mama's, there you'll see my keys. Bring them down to me, and well, well, what impetuous things these girls are. Angelica was gone, and had run up panting to the bedroom, and found the keys, and was back again before the king had finished a muffin. Ow, love, says he, you must go all the way back for my desk, in which my spectacles are. If he would, but have heard me out. Be hanged to her. There she is off again. Angelica. Angelica. When his majesty called in his loud voice, she knew she must obey, and came back. My dear, when you go out of a room, how often have I told you, shut the door. That's a darling. That's all. At last the keys and the desk and the spectacles were got, and the king mended his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.